Hello,
here to cause confusion. I'll crash its board.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Office Hours. Now, I have to admit, friends, I am not feeling particularly inspired today. I usually, reserve Office Hours for some discussion of British news or whatever's going on. Really not much of interest, in my opinion, going on. And to make matters worse, I can't find my lighter. Oh, it's just one of those days. Believe it or not, I've been doing meditation exercises and various incantations and rituals to prepare myself to dive into the Sloppersborg that is LBC. Once it's just one of those weeks where I'm like, right, I'm just going to sling some LBC on. Let's get even more depressed about the state of things. But I have to find my... Give me what... This is a good start, isn't it? I need a lighter. Hold on.
Right.
Ah, oh, Gordon Bennett, as they say. Right. Where are we? Okay. So just as we get going, I'll remind people to buy some courses at the academic agency. Trivium. Bestseller there, or the newest course, Foundations of Shakespeare. Pick up that one if you want to know more about Shakespeare than you could possibly ever know about, all in one course. Yeah, I mean, it's basically master's level course, given away. All right, now. Where should we start? Now, even though I put James O'Brien in the title, as ever, we're going to have a look at selection of people from LBC. Now, I had a look around on what's on offer. And, in the lineup they've got of LBC, there's, I tell it to you straight, Ferrari. I'm Nick Ferrari. I didn't really like any of his topics, and he's talking to Farage and stuff. Can't be bothered to watch that, so we're not going to bother with Ferrari. But I've noticed, right, so they've got this guy who's like the literal image of an NPC. You know when you go on a video game, you're making your character on an RPG, it's Morrowind, and then there's like the default template before you've stuck a beard and a moustache on there or given him elf ears or whatever. There's just like the default character that is unaltered. I've always thought that this guy here...
Beat Dalu is the...
This guy, I don't know his name. This absolute NPC, this guy here, is like the default, player character before any other alterations. Right, he's got a couple I want to have a look at. But I've noticed, I don't know if he's new. I think he's new in the LBC lineup. There's this guy called... Ben Kentish, right? I don't know how long he's been around, but I've noticed that like he seems to be a new addition to the lineup. His name, by the way, Ben Kentish, is calling out because it's obvious what you can do with his name, right? Obviously, I can't say on air, but you know what I'm talking about. But he also, this Ben Kentish character, also has this NPC-ish physiognomy, and he has been touching some more, let's just say, dangerous topics. When did Ben Kentish join LBC? I've gone on his LinkedIn profile. He's actually on LinkedIn. when did he join? I think he's basically new, Ben Kentish. But anyway. His topics are ones of interest, okay? He's got one where somebody calls in about Islamic people living in Britain, and he's got one about should ethnicity be recorded in crime stats. I reckon we're going to lead with Ben Kentish, right? Because I've not seen him before, and he's a lineup to the absolute smorgasbord of talent they've got at NBC. all right, so let's start with should ethnicity be recorded by the police?
The reason they ask you your ethnicity, and I might well be
absolute wrong. NPC physiognomy, absolute NPC as well. Not quite as much of an NPC as the last guy, as the other presenter, because he's got the kind of quiff gives him the modicum of a personality, right? That he doesn't look like a cardboard cut out. But here we are. Suspect ethnicity data. Now, what's interesting about this, by the way, is that this was one of the points being called for by my buddy Charlie Downs and his project Restore Britain. If you remember, Rupert Lowe has started basically what is this pressure group. And a couple of weeks back, before I went on holiday, I did an interview with Charlie Downs in which he was saying, like, this is going to be a thing, and a lot of people have joined him. Well, one of the things that they were calling for was this, was ethnicity data, being released. They were pushing for it hard. And it's interesting to now note that Farage has picked up on that and is now pushing for it himself. He's kind of taken over the talking point. So it's a nice little test case of how the work that Charlie's doing there is actually having an effect on the political discourse, because now Farage has demanded it. It becomes a topic on a show like LBC, and it's reaching the centrist dads, the left wingers, and so on and so forth. Okay. And, who listens to LBC? Who watches LBC? It's the centrist dads. It's the commuter belt. It's your Lib Dem voter in, you know, around where I live, on their way to work or something like this. So anyway, let's see what this chap has got to say about it.
I guess the reason they ask you your ethnicity, and I might well be wrong, but it's just a guess, is...
DEI, that's what it is, isn't it?
No, I think it's so they can collate data on which groups of people are most likely to be the victims of crime, I guess. I would guess that's what it is, but I might be wrong.
Well, I don't believe that is. I think there's a two-tier policing system in this country, and it has to be scrapped.
But what, do you think you being, I don't know what, presuming you're white British...
Correct.
Yes. Do you think that means that, what, they were less likely to investigate it or something?
I have no idea. Perhaps anyone from the police would...
I hope they will, because...
Does anyone recognise the caller in, by the way? Is it, like, secretly Peter Whittle or something? It'd just be funny if we knew who the caller was.
I think I'm probably right, and that's why they do it, but I don't know. So if you've got a police officer listening to this and you have an answer to pull, why do you ask the ethnicity of victims of crime? 03456060973. So, Paul, do you think it makes sense, given that you're being asked for your ethnicity, for the ethnicity of the alleged perpetrators, like the knife man you're talking about, to be made public?
Correct, I do. Why hide it? It's going to come out eventually anyway. So why hide it?
Because what would be gained by disclosing it?
Well, to alert the public of who is responsible.
But how does that change anything or anyone's behaviour?
Well, it's not changing behaviour. If a crime happens...
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely relevant, by the way. It's absolutely relevant. For example, near where I live recently, there was a gang of youths playing loud drill music in the middle of the night. It was 2 a.m, and I got up absolutely furious, and I was ready to go down there. And the missus like, don't go down there. These guys are dangerous. I was like, no, fuck it. I'm going down there. Right. Anyway, by the time I got down there, they've moved on up the street, and I watched them tear something down from a railing. Okay. It absolutely mattered that gang was an Asian gang who were not usually local to that area. It absolutely was necessary so that the police knew what they were looking for and so that other people know what to look out for. This group of lads here playing loud drill music at 2 a.m. in a fucking residential middle-class white area, they're obviously trouble. aren't they? It's obviously relevant information. And I tell you, if you don't believe me, I've got a book here by Thomas Sowell, right? I don't talk about Thomas Sowell much these days, but he's got a book called Discrimination and Disparities from a couple of years back. Discrimination and Disparities. And at the start of that book, he talks about how prejudice in its old-fashioned conception and discrimination, like what used to be meant by the word discriminate, okay, is actually relevant, and it could be life-saving, okay, in many different scenarios. And of course, because it's Thomas Sowell, he's talking about black ghetto areas, really, really kind of high crime areas. And he says, like, look, you don't have time to collect all of the relevant data to make an individual assessment of each and every single individual. You have to rely on a heuristic. You have to rely on, you know, what some people might call stereotypes. Okay, but those stereotypes and those heuristics can be life-saving. They're also incredibly important information, for example, for insurance companies, for businesses that want to open in certain areas. Okay, all of that data is important. And when it gets to the level of insurance and banks and so on and so forth, and driving cars and things like that, absolutely relevant information. So why wouldn't it be relevant information for the police? Absolutely disgraceful behavior by this LBC guy to try to pretend what everybody with a modicum of common sense knows. But let's carry on.
They usually ask you, the description of the person. You give them the description of the person, but they won't make it public.
Right. So if there's a crime, if someone stabbed on my street, as someone was recently, actually, and the police tell me that person came from, I don't know, San Marino, what do I do with that information? What do we as a society do with that information?
Well, you've got a description of the person or a
No, but they've been charged. They're already in custody. The police have got who it is. Why do I need to know that they're Spanish or Polish or Canadian or whatever, or Afghan or
Look how disingenuous he's being, right? Nobody's thinking, oh, yeah, there's a thug in my area. He's probably Canadian. Yeah, disingenuous. Everybody knows who we're talking about, right? So what's this disingenuous game? Nobody's worried about about an influx of Canadians coming into an area, bringing the area down. Why? Because Canadians don't commit a lot of crime. Why? Because Canadians are just kind of nice, kind of wet liberal people most of the time. Okay, who's probably the worst thing a Canadian is going to do is tut at you in the queue when you're queuing up to a press or something like that. Okay, obviously nobody's thinking about Canadians. Disingenuous, right? Why do they pull this game? Why do they act as if everybody doesn't know what the caller is on about? Anyway, let's come on the fourfold breath. In 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4. Out. 3, 4. Hold. Right. Let's carry on.
No. Turkish.
To alert the public.
But alert them to what? What does the public do differently?
We're all hiding behind this matter of, like, too frightened to mention what people's ethnicity are. Now, we all know the facts who carry knives in this country and who doesn't. I'm not saying white people don't, because they do. But
then,
you know,
we do know the facts.
Not every terrorist is, terrorist is Islamic, but a majority of terrorist offences are Islamic.
But what do we do with that information? Do we then avoid Muslim people on the tube? Do we steer clear of certain communities that we think are carrying knives? What do we do?
Yes! Yes! Yes, of course, you twat!
Do with that, Paul, because that's just stereotyping.
It's information, and information is knowledge, and you can, avoid certain situations and scenarios.
What you mean is avoid certain people, isn't it?
Well,
see, I bet your bottom dollar this guy's not going down to like deepest, darkest Luton or Hounslow or something tonight. He's going to go to a posh suburb. Wherever this doofus lives, he lives in a posh suburb somewhere. Okay? And if that gang of youths that I was talking about came down his street, he'd be onto the blower into the police in a jiffy. So what is the purpose of these disingenuous comments? You're just putting people's lives in danger by denying the truth. Okay? I mean, I can see people saying, like, this is like 2014 tier. But the reason I put LBC on is to remind you where the quote-unquote mainstream is still, even now in 2025. This is where they are still. Anyway.
That's what you mean. If you're going to go to an area where you know there's a high possibility that you could be, I don't know, like walking down the street with a piece of jewellery and you can get knifed or something, you'd avoid it, wouldn't you not?
Right, so if you're on the tube and you know that statistically most bombings on the tube have been carried out by Muslims...
I don't go on the tube.
All right, but if you're on a train then or somewhere else where there might be a terror attack and you see a Muslim person, what you think, well, actually, statistically now, that's racist, it's racial stereotyping, it's racial profiling.
It's called being aware and conscious of your surroundings.
It's not really, is it? Because the chances of, in your situation, that Muslim person being a terrorist are absolutely minuscule. So if you treat them as if they are, that is racial profiling. And what about all the crimes committed by white people?
I just love how the caller, by the way, is just an unrepentant patriot. Just like, he's having none of it whatsoever. He is like the yes Chad as a kind of middle-aged LBC caller.
What if people say, what if there was a spate of burglaries carried out by white Brits in Southampton, Paul, and people started avoiding you because they said, oh, well, actually, you're a white British person, Paul, so around here you might be a burgler? You wouldn't like that very much, would you?
Everyone has a choice in a
parochial. But you wouldn't like that, would you?
Yeah, what if this absolutely made-up scenario that doesn't pretend to what's actually happening in the world happened? What then? What if this thing that doesn't exist was real? What then? What about the things that are actually real? This is why I just don't understand this mindset of this LBC guy at all.
So why do you think other people deserve to be treated in the same way?
I don't think I've noticed it, to be honest with you.
Well, if somebody actively said to you, I'm avoiding white British people in Southampton because I fear they might all be robbers.
But if they said it to you'd have no issue with it. You'd be aware of it.
So if you found out people were avoiding you because you were a white man, you'd have no issue with it.
Everyone has a choice.
But you would, Paul, and that's, we all would, because it's racial, ethnic profiling, and if the police give people the ammunition to do more of that, then I'm worried that that is not a good thing.
Terrible. Ben Kentish. Just awful. I'm glad LBC have really added to their talent roster with this dude. Let's have a look at another one now. Ben Kentish debunking another caller on the compatibility of religions. Oh, this is fun, isn't it? Oh, it's a super Partagas today, the cigar. I'm already halfway down it through stress.
Thinking about the JD Vance, and I was listening to you on my long drive down, and I'm not sure whether he's right or wrong, but I think he's echoing what a lot of people are thinking in the UK at the moment, on the basis that We have all these horrible scandals. We have all these horrible comments. The hotels, the migration is the number one topic in this country. You know, people protesting, and I think what we've got is an element here of it starts off with we've got incompatible migration rather than I don't think it comes back to colour or whether you're brown or whatever. I think it comes back to incompatible cultures.
Right.
If that makes sense. I think it comes...
Right, so bear in mind now, this caller is literally just giving... He's not even giving a racial analysis. He's giving a level zero, my first baby red pill. It's all about my culture, right? That's the point that he's making. It's my cult. He's giving... A 2008 Roger Scruton take here. Let's see how Ben Kentish reacts.
There's a lot of religion at the moment that's over here that isn't compatible with ours. They have different values.
Like what? Seeing,
well, I think you've got... I'm trying to be as tactful as I can in what I say and as correct in what I say. You've got all the grooming gangs, scandals,
in the Church of England?
No, within...
What a disingenuous interjection. If people say grooming gangs, they're not talking about the Church of England, Ben Kentish. They're talking about Rotherham, aren't they? They're talking about tens of thousands of girls, aren't they, all across the country, aren't they? That when people talk about grooming gangs, they're not talking about the Church of England, Ben. Let's carry on.
Within the Islamic religion.
And the Church of England and the Catholic Church.
Yeah, of course, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's not about one religion, is it?
No, it's not about one religion, but I just think it's being focused to us all on these...
Look at him. Oh, I gotcha. Because there was also abuse in these other things, right? Reddit tier, gotcha. Oh, what's he going to do now? You've got him on the ropes, Ben. Let's have a look.
And this media that's coming out day in, day out, in terms of they're the focus. We're not bringing up the historical BBC allegations anymore. It just seems to be everyone's focused on the migration and those causing the problems. I've just seen some reports tonight on X about hotels in Stanwell near Heathrow Airport and other hotels. It seems to be there's a lot of resentment coming, and I think that's where it's coming from. I don't think it's necessarily a black or white. I think it's the resentment that's coming from
religious values. So would you say, Damien, that religions that say, I don't know, for example, that being gay is to some extent sinful, or that women don't have the same rights as men, would you say they were incompatible with our values?
I think they are very incompatible. If you're not going to allow, people.
Look at the liberal frame games going on here. It's just incredible. It's like being in a time warp, isn't it? Like a time warp.
People to be gay or people to be have their own.
So the Church of England and the Catholic Church are incompatible with British values.
Yeah, they both are. Yeah.
Really?
Well, they both have been.
I mean,
our
monarch is the head of one of them. Our monarch is the head of an institution that still doesn't allow gay people to get married.
This caller is being absolutely skewered here because he's come in with a liberal frame. Because he's only taken, right, my first baby's red pill, right? Because he's literally a Harion Gladive tier Tory boy, okay, who's just dipping his toe in. Ben Kentish is actually getting the better of him by wrapping him up, right? This is like Ben Kentish is not a particularly skilled operator, in my opinion. But because this guy is coming in with like very mild Tory talking points, I think he's actually getting the worse of this exchange.
But in the UK, it was illegal to be gay, wasn't it? That's gone now.
If the church had its way, it wouldn't have been. The Catholic Church still doesn't ordain women as bishops. I mean, if you want to talk about religions that are at odds with Western values, you know, it's a can of worms you don't want to open unless you want to start saying that Christianity is at odds with British values.
No, I was actually specifically saying that I think with all the reporting in the media of the of Keir Starmer taking away the...
You were saying that Islam is at odds with British values, I think, weren't you?
Islam is at odds with British values,
under your logic, so is the state, the religion of the predominant religion of this country.
Yes, and I'm not necessarily agreeing with the predominant religion of this country. What I'm saying is they're of different values.
Look at these tactics, the whataboutism, and the guy is just caught up in pretzels because he's trying to maintain the liberal frame. Oh, my God. Oh, my golly gosh. But Overton window, ladies and gentlemen, shifting the discourse. Fucking hell.
Personal thoughts. You know, I'm not necessarily deeply religious. And I know,
the Church of England is at odds with English values.
No,
But that's what you're telling me. That is what you're telling me. You've just told me that the church is at odds with British values.
I think as we've progressed with our British value,
yeah.
and we've accepted that, you know, 30 years ago you had to hide and if you were gay, didn't you? You don't anymore in
well, you still can't get married in the Church of England.
No, you know, you can have civil partnerships, etc.
You still can't get married because the Church of England thinks...
Look how smug he is. He's actually got the upper hand here. It's like he's got him in a headlock and he's wrenching it in, working the leg. And the guy is just skewered because he's a Harry England Eve Theodore boy. Oh, shit.
That a gay person marrying another gay person is not right in the eyes of God.
Yeah, no, I get you, and I did say to the person on the phone, I was sort of quite, I wanted to have a point and sort of say where, it's a multitude of points I think I've got. I think I've got the hotels are the money spent on hotels, the immigration, the boats. It's just so much
You see, this poor guy is confused. He hasn't had access to the right sort of voices to guide him in the right way. Okay. So he knows something's wrong, but he's absolutely floundering here because he hasn't done the necessary work. And Ben Kentish has had it for breakfast, I'm afraid.
Your newsfeed every single day, no matter where you look.
Yes, it is. But it doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean that migrants are destroying our civilization.
Yeah, okay.
Defeated. The Liberals got that one. That last caller, he was prepared. He was seasoned. Maybe he'd watched a couple of Lotus Eaters or maybe even he'd watched this channel or something like that. This dude, forget about it. Absolutely forget about it.
I'll stand to be corrected.
So you agree that immigration isn't destroying European civilization?
I wonder... Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that... I have to be careful what I say here. Yeah.
Why? Just say it.
I do think it is spoiling. It is against the civil.
A comeback. A jobber comeback late in the day. Jobber comeback. Come on, let's see it. Come on, mate. You can do it.
Civilization.
How? How can it be against the civilization if the centuries old Church of England, on which our values are built, is also. Yeah. Against our now modern values? How can migration be the problem?
No, okay, that's a fair point.
He cut off the hope spot. Put him away. Tombstone. 1, 2, 3, and it's over. Victory for Kentish. Fuck's sake.
Damon, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed.
Absolutely. Absolutely destroyed, I'm afraid. You see, and that's what can happen. If you're still playing in the Liberal frame, they got you on all these different points, all these different ways, skewering you. There is no way to defeat that without stepping outside and rejecting the Liberal frame entirely. You can't defeat the Liberal frame with it from. It's like that caller was basically fighting with two hands tied behind his back and was offering his chin for Kentish to punch him over and over and over again. Anyway, that was our introduction to the new star member of the LBC roster. I don't know who we replaced. Let's see what our NPC has got to say about the Epping riots.
You know, of the Stand Up to Racism group. Very good to have you on the programme. Thank you for being there. I wonder whether you think this idea has merit in trying to get people to stop working if they're not here legally.
Well... I think I agreed with what you said earlier. I don't really see what problem this is solving, because it seems to me at the moment the big problem that we've got is that asylum seekers in hotels are being targeted by people. There are various issues which members of the far right are hijacking and organising demonstrations around the country and using the issue to build support. So the big problem you've got is a lot of demonstrations, some of which have turned violent, mm-hmm. Outside hotels housing asylum seekers.
I'll just mention for a second, by the way, I find it really interesting that LBC is still talking about Epping. I think Epping happened while I was still on holiday, didn't it? Didn't it happen like a week and a half, 2 weeks? I was away when that happened. So it happened a good while back. There was a much larger demonstration in Manchester where they all had their English and their Union Jack flags out. No violence happened at that one, okay? But it was pretty sizable. I saw the images. That has had a pretty much a media blackout. I haven't seen BBC cover it. LBC have done no videos on it. It's like the media are trying to act like the Manchester one didn't take place, and they're still focusing on Epping for some reason. It's probably because Epping turned violent and the Manchester one was peaceful. But it's still interesting that they're just not giving that any spotlight whatsoever. Anyway, let's carry on.
Because then there's a real concern that those demonstrations could see a repeat of what we saw last year with racist violent riots taking place. So I'm not sure how the ID card solves a big problem that you've got at the moment.
Just on that for a bit, I mean, is your view that it is motivated by racism when those people protest non-violently outside asylum hotels? I totally accept that it's been hijacked and the violence is caused by thugs and what have you, but...
Oh, the LBC MPC is pushing back. Very surprising. He's actually pushing back the MPC. Let's have a look.
For those people taking signs, standing outside asylum hotels, is that motivated fundamentally by racism, in your view?
Someone says, how does AA listen to this stuff without wanting to go 10 rounds with a punching bag? Mate, I spent an hour doing meditative exercises to prepare myself for this. And I'm smoking a massive stogie. So let's carry on.
Well, I think that some of the issues, so if you look at, there was a sexual assault in Epping, for example. That's correct, yeah. There was an alleged sexual assault in Epping, and it's going through due judicial process and the alleged perpetrator.
I think we need to talk about Sabi's assaults on the donut stand, don't we? That's something that I can't leave unaddressed here. You know, if you're going to go on LBC, at least make an effort. Come on. Anyway, let's carry on.
Traitor has pleaded not guilty. So that issue, yes. I think the problem with that is, are there demonstrations outside, you know, various places around the country when the perpetrator is white? Because it seems like it only seems to be a big issue when the perpetrator happens to be of a different ethnicity.
There shouldn't be a Sabi, that's why. Right? There's a difference between domestic crime and preventable crimes that could have been prevented if the government hadn't decided to bring these people from war-torn regions around the world, many of whom are used to, actual conflicts, wielding machetes and whatnot, and bringing them into middle-class areas. It doesn't even matter what class the area is. Any area in the country, okay? If you're going to bring in people from literally the most violent parts of the world, okay, many of whom probably have PTSD, okay, if they've come from Syria, where there was literally a civil war, or Somalia, one of the most violent places in the entire world, and then you just drop those people in the middle of bloody leafy Surrey, what the fuck do you expect is going to happen, you lunatic? Okay, it's not the same thing. And we have to come to a point in this country where this voice, this Sabi Dalu here, is not part of the conversation at all. Why does she get to have a platform or a say in anything whatsoever? She is literally defending criminals who shouldn't be in the country. Get them out. That's the only acceptable line. The only acceptable line on this topic. It's not even a conversation, right? So why this bird has a place at the table, I'll never know.
...city and different nationality other than white British. So I think that's the
issue. I think the issue is fundamentally that person should not be in the country.
Yes! The MPC is absolutely nailing it today.
That's why there is even greater anger. There is always anger, of course, at appalling sexual crimes, whoever perpetrates them. But part of the reason people are so angry about...
I tell you what, the LBC guy is the MPC is... It, He's about to throw a robot, ladies and gentlemen.
These people shouldn't be here in the first place.
Yeah, but I think that this idea that they shouldn't be in the country is racist because actually, one, Britain's got a legal duty to provide a sanctuary for those fleeing persecution and war.
Why? Based on what? Who decided that Britain has to be the refuge for all of the scum of the world? Any place there's a trouble, anywhere in the world, Britain has a duty to look after them? Since when? Why? Tony Blair himself said that that convention was drawn up after World War II and it is now outmoded. Why is there an obligation to any of these places at all? That the country has problems enough without taking on further problems. So I just don't see how this is still a viable opinion, even in today's political climate.
Secondly, we
half
take
these people
far
aren't.
Fewer. Well, a lot of them are because most
over
the majority.
Half.
I'm telling you what, if I see a word in that chat, you're getting banned. I am not having words on Sabi Dalu. No, I am not having it. You will be banned. You are. It's bad for my Zen. Okay, it's bad for my Zen. Come on. Right, let's carry on. Let's carry on.
Over half are rejected on their first asylum test. It's about 40%, 45% approval rate. So is that can't be racist too?
For what year though?
Last year there was a drop from about.
Look, years. Okay, you said nobody said word. I saw somebody saying after 20 pints. Okay. That is a one foot in wood. Come on. I'm not having it. Not even after 20 pints.
73% in asylum approvals to about 40-odd%. So it can't be racist to reject the asylum claim of various people coming into the country.
Well, you'd have to look at the details on which it was rejected, because my understanding is on appeal, most of them win. Because I think there is just a motivation to basically say, get these people out of the country. And so some of these cases are inappropriately dismissed, in my view, because we take far fewer refugees than any other European country. And
give me one good reason why Sabu Dalu, right, should be allowed on like national radio to make this argument when we are in the biggest immigration crisis that the country has ever seen right now. Okay. Lovely neighborhoods are being destroyed as we speak all around the country. Everybody has noticed at this point. Okay. Everybody has had enough. It is time to stand up to Sabu Dalu, in my opinion. This cannot be allowed to just, you know, freely. We've had enough of all of this, right? The time for this sort of talk was 10 years ago. Boris Johnson, with what he's done, has blown all of this out of the water. The scale of the problem now is way beyond anything that she is talking about.
The vast majority of asylum seekers actually seek sanctuary in neighbouring countries. So therefore, the majority of the world's refugees are in the Middle East.
But what do we do about those who have no right to be here? It cannot be racist to have a functioning immigration system which says, I'm really sorry, you have no right.
Tell you what, fair play to the MPC. He has changed since the last time I saw him. Maybe he is slowly being red-pilled by all the people who were calling him up every single day or just by events or something, but this guy has changed. This is not the same guy from a month ago, is he? Last time we did this, he was a lot more like Ben Kentish. So maybe there's hope for Ben Kentish yet. Maybe a couple of more months on the job and he too will become like the NPC.
To be in this country, particularly if it's an asylum claim, out you go.
Well, I think the whole discussion is, because the whole discussion is, stop the boats, they shouldn't be here.
Yes.
Well, they might have a right to be here.
Yes, and that, as I said, they might do, but that is not in and of itself racist, surely.
But the majority of asylum applications are actually upheld after appeal. So why is that? That's because they have a genuine right to asylum.
But the route to asylum cannot be get in a boat from northern France, come over to the UK, claim asylum, get put up in a hotel for years and years and years and years. That cannot be the process. And I'm sorry, but it literally cannot be racist.
This guy is killing it.
This ain't working.
I actually agree with both of those points. I think it cannot be the case that people should jump on a boat and cross the channel, because that is very life-threatening. Lots of people have drowned in the process. So you need safe and legal routes for that.
Oh, Jess, I can't stop. She is just the worst.
So that means people need visas to come here, or other legal means of coming here.
And those people who are turned away... Those people who are turned away from those processing centres, as and when they start up in Europe, in France, what have you, turning those people away because their claim isn't viable for asylum in the UK, is that racist?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the whole stop the boats discussion, they shouldn't be here, they're all illegal, so that's racist, because actually stopping the boats should happen because people are making life...
I don't know if I can do this anymore. It's just pain. It's so painful.
Threatening journey. People are drowning. And I think we need safe and legal routes. So I think, yes.
But not for everybody.
Like we did with Afghanistan and the Ukraine, people actually had a legal and safe means to get in. I think you need to do that with a wide range of countries.
But not for everyone.
Well, you have to work out the system of doing that. And it seems to me that the system needs to be an agreement with France, not what Keir Starmer struck. There needs to be a proper agreement with France where they're processing asylum claims.
Very good to talk to you.
And then people have a legal means of getting here.
Very good
to talk to you. The NPC's had enough. I could tell. I could see it in his eyes. He's had enough. He began to hate. He began to hate. All right, it's time for the main event, ladies and gentlemen. If that wasn't bad enough, it's time for the dog-faced gremlin himself, James O'Brien. The slovenly dog-faced gremlin is here. And he's talking about one of my favorite topics, digital ID, the Dark Lord special, which he's still trying to bring in by any means necessary, that he never sleeps. Let's see what James O'Brien has to say.
Cards. Who thinks of Gordon Jackson? It's very much an age-based association there. And of course, it wasn't ID cards that did for him. It was the wily Gestapo officer who said good luck to him in English after he had passed himself off as a German quite perfectly, but whose guard temporarily slipped in one of the closing scenes of The Great Escape. And the Gestapo officer said, good luck. And Gordon Jackson's character said, thank you very much. He's Scottish, by the way. and he got caught as a consequence of that. And I only mention it because whenever I've turned my attention to ID cards in the past, digital ID cards, I've often found myself thinking of The Great Escape. Probably the first time as a kid that I became conscious of the practice of being asked to produce your papers on pain of punishment. Papers, please. Papers, please. I won't do a German accent. But papers, please, would be the instruction that you received. That's what.
Don't tell me James O'Brien has gone based as well. No way. No way. No way. There's going to be a sting in the tail. Yeah, surely not. Come on, let's see where he's going.
What we saw on The Great Escape. And I thought, I don't want to be like that because I don't want to be like the Nazis, which is a fairly good rule in life, isn't it? Be less Nazi. And yet...
Yet I find myself increasingly. Let's see where James O'Brien is going with this.
D cards, I don't think, can be exclusively associated with that particular regime. Why are they in the news today? I will tell you. Keir Starmer is looking into the idea of what the Daily Mail describes as Blair-style ID cards, and they describe it.
Yeah, the reason they describe it as Blair style is because Tony Blair still now, 15, almost 20 years since he's been the Prime Minister, okay? It'll be 20 years in 2 years' time. So what's that? 18 years since Blair was the Prime Minister. He's still there running the biggest think tank in the world all day, every day, pushing digital ID, okay? That's the reason that the Daily Mail call it Blair style, James O'Brien, okay? I'm going to have to get another scar in a minute.
Ugh. It is one way of fighting illegal immigration, which does seem to be exercising much of the chattering classes at the moment. The Prime Minister is said to have become convinced by the benefits. The Cabinet appears to be in agreement. Number 10 is now working on...
Convinced by the benefits? I wonder how that conversation went. I wonder how that conversation went with the Dark Lord and Keir Starmer. Feel your anger, Keir. Feel your anger. You will come to know the truth. Yes, Master. Come on now. Yeah, Keir Starmer has been persuaded of the benefits of digital ID.
The idea, the Observer reported yesterday, which, by the way, has become a cracking read. It was a good read before, don't get me wrong, but it's a very different organ now, the Observer. I don't know if you've cast an eye over it. Power of newspapers is very, very much on the wane. But if you enjoy nice, sort of informative reads, the Observer's getting something right. And it was in that newspaper, yes.
Imagine going on air and unironically shilling for the Observer. Yeah, well, where I get my news from, I find it very informative, is the Observer. Yeah, that's a brilliant take from James O'Brien.
Yesterday, that the report of an imminent rollout or a possible rollout was reported, with the objections being, I love this phrase, practical rather than philosophical. So the current problems with introducing it would involve practicalities as opposed to philosophies. I want to talk about the philosophical element of it, and I want to do it as fully and frankly as possible.
Where's James? I tell you what, I reckon James O'Brien might come out against digital ID here. He's going to turn on the Master. He's going to turn on Blair here. Let's see what's going to happen.
I genuinely want to know, early doors, why you have a problem with this idea. 0345 60 60 973. Here are some things you currently have. You probably have a national insurance number, right?
Oh no, he's not going to be against it. He's for it. He's coming out for it, isn't he? He's making the argument that you've already got a ton of things already, so you might as well stick them all into the all one everything Blair digital ID. I knew it. James O'Brien, I thought he was gearing up to turn against it. Where is he going with this? He's keeping us guessing, ladies and gentlemen.
You do have a national insurance number? You probably have an NHS number, right? You probably have your address, if you have bothered to insure, on the electoral register at the moment. So they know who you are, how you are, and where you are. That was quite pithy, wasn't it?
We already live in a police state, so let's make it more of one. Where is he going with this?
You are how you are and where you are. What else have we got? You've probably got a passport, although were we conducting this conversation in the United States of America, that would be much less of a presumption. And of course, in socioeconomic and generational terms, you're less likely to have a passport if you are from a poorer background or if you are younger. You might also have a driving license, which is, of course, another form of photo ID. So what have we got so far? We've got national insurance number. We've got NHS number. We've got electoral register. We've got driving license. Anything else on that list? Don't ring in with it. Just text it to 84850 or WhatsApp 0345 60 60.
Yeah, I've got a library card number. I've got my Royal Horticultural Society card. I've got my National Heritage membership card. What else have I got? My British Library card. What else?
973. If you were to try to knit all of those things together.
Oh, yeah, my gym membership card. That's very important for getting into that. All of these bits of information all obviously need to go into one big app so that all of these bits of information can be collated in one place so that Tony Blair knows exactly every single little thing about me.
together, it would surely be a good thing. Also, I mean, look, genuinely illegal migration, people who are not here with valid asylum claims and valid refugee status. Unfortunately, we're living in a country at the moment where some deeply unpleasant, many deeply unpleasant people are desperately trying to conflate all of those issues to the point where essentially anybody who might be considered a bit foreign-looking is adjudged to be a criminal, either in full flight or waiting to happen. I don't know, and I didn't know whether I was going to talk about it or not, actually, but I don't know if you...
He's just so repellent. He doesn't have a single redeeming quality, does he? Just when I thought O'Brien may have found, like, the red line in his... He just finds a way to be the to have the worst possible take on every single issue. It's remarkable.
Sure. Some of the responses to Rishi Sunak at the weekend, simply posting Happy Yorkshire Day to people and reminding them on social media that Yorkshire is his home. You know when some...
Yeah, because when I think of Yorkshire, you know, what I think about straight away is Rishi Sunak. You know, I'm not thinking about the Hovis lad, and I'm not thinking about... you know, Yorkshire puddings and all of the other great things from Yorkshire. What I'm thinking about is Rishi Sunak. He's so disingenuous.
Something hideous has happened because for those of us who no longer go on Elon Musk's platform, some stories break out of it onto other places because of the sort of secondhand reporting of it. And some of the responses to that, I mean... At risk of giving them too much oxygen, people telling Rishi Sunak that he had no business claiming to be from Yorkshire or even from the United Kingdom, they do rather seem to be receiving more coverage and...
Yeah, you're right, James O'Brien. Rishi Sunak is as Yorkshire as a Richmond sausage, isn't he? He's as Yorkshire as a bloody... I don't know, like, when I think of Yorkshire, the first thing that I think... I've got all these history books by Arthur Bryan, right? The Medieval Foundation by Arthur Bryan. I'm going to open this book up, right? Published in 1966 in London. And I'm going to go to The Making of the Monks and the Friars, The Medieval Village, Twilight of the Holy Church, Norman Discipline. Oh, yeah, look at this. Chapter 7, How Yorkshire Absolutely is embodied by the spirit of Rishi Sunak. Fucking twat.
Volume at the moment, don't they, those kind of views? And to make me feel very sorry for Rishi Sunak, I mean, to the point of feeling that you'd almost want to put an arm around the guy if he was seeing some of the bile that was being directed.
Rishi Sunak almost bankrupted this country, okay? Rishi Sunak, who is a multi-billionaire, okay, but literally presided over the worst government of our lifetimes ever, okay? And just before one of the biggest scandals in recent memory, the Afghan scandal, where the government that he was part of secretly signed a deal to take 24,000 Afghans in, right? Just before that was about to come out, he called an election so the Tories wouldn't be sat there holding the hot potato for the fallout of their disgraceful actions. The biggest influx in non-European immigration in history. But spare a thought for the feelings of Rishi Sunak. Spare a thought. You know, he had his gap year as the Prime Minister and now he's gone off to work for Goldman Sachs. But spare a thought for Rishi Sunak. Spare a thought for him. Everybody, F's in the chat for Rishi Sunak's feelings. Everybody, shed a tear for Rishi Sunak. Fucking Wally in the rain. Wreck this country and then buggered off on a yacht.
At him, despite our political differences aside.
Oh, I can't stand it. Right, I'm going to... You listen to this twat and I'm going to go and get another cigar.
Is a mark of where we are. And it's important not to let those people, not to let those voices put you off something that would be a good idea for a variety of reasons. If, you know, one of the reasons being given is to assuage that kind of feeling, that kind of thinking, that the massive difference between being a huge racist or even a small racist and having hopes that illegal immigration, illegal migration can be properly addressed seems to be a difference that many, many people in my industry particularly are determined to completely ignore. We are here. A senior minister told The Observer that Sir Keir Starmer had ordered a comprehensive and expansive look at the role technology can play in government, including digital ID. Some people worry about Tony Blair's proximity to the kind of corporations that might be providing this sort of digital ID. I'm very keen to hear you explain what those reservations are and indeed to reveal whether or not you share them. I'm having to press pause on my screen because some people are taking this rather seriously and pointing out that they have other forms of ID that could be considered to be important, but some people are taking it less seriously, including Ollie, who's been in touch to tell me that he still has a Blockbuster card.
Tell you what, right? Every time I think I can do this, every time I think I have achieved mind over matter and supreme self-control and mastery, right? We got through Ben Kentish, didn't we? And the NPC, relatively plain sailing, building up to James O'Brien, but somehow he finds a way, doesn't he, to just be that extra, specially extra little bit cunty, doesn't he? There's something about this guy. He is like kryptonite. I can't stand him. Why do I do this? That we started, so we must finish. So let's carry on. I'm going to spark up this Monte Cristo number three.
How much is on your on your phone? How much of your ID is on your phone? They've got your number. They've got your details. They probably know who you are. I know you could have a burner and what have you, but there's a lot there, isn't there? Paul's Tesco club card will reveal to whoever got hold of it what all of his appetites involved quite possibly what he was having for tea tonight. So I wonder, sitting here in 2025, opening this conversation with a reference to a film set in the 1940s that probably came out in the 1960s, I didn't double check, whether or not the world has turned so much that the whole concept of an ID card means something very different in the 21st century to what it would have meant in the early 20th century. I also think, we need a word for this, this is one of those topics where windows to other countries would be, or windows from other countries would be really helpful. The idea that we sit here wringing our hands and having philosophical debates about the notion of a digital ID card feels not only anachronistic, potentially, but also...
Yeah, anachronistic, because these people have, they've built the control grid and they're just working to put the cherry on top. So let's just give them a helping hand, isn't it, James?
Insular. I want to know what happens in other countries and whether or not any problems have presented themselves. How do you feel, as somebody with perhaps a foot in two populations, about the United Kingdom's historic resistance to this idea? And where?
Well, let me tell you, James, I happen to know another regime, and the Iranian regime, where my dad is from, every Iranian citizen has to have something called a Shinos number, right? A Shinos number. And that Shinos number is connected to your ability to do basically anything in that country. It is a way for the mullahs and their regime, which you presumably think is totalitarian, to keep tabs on the population. So that's your open window into another country and another culture, James.
Where does that resistance come from? So if the objections to the latest plans are practical rather than philosophical, it falls to us to examine what the philosophical objections are. I don't know if you were listening last week when we talked about facial recognition technology and by Fred Scott in Uxbridge, and it pains me to say this because he'll never let me forget. I think he may have closed down the entire conversation forever when it comes to future sinister regimes by pointing out that if a future sinister regime were to come in to power tomorrow, the first thing they would do is all the sinister things that we were worried about a future sinister regime doing. So it's all very well saying, I like ID cards now, but imagine if a British Donald Trump got into power, where would we be then? If a British Donald Trump got into power and thought that he could accelerate his evil mission by bringing in digital ID cards, he'd bring in digital ID cards tomorrow. Ditto facial recognition technology. It's a splendid idea now in our pluralistic liberal democracy, but what if a dictator got in? And then what would he do with it? Well, if a dictator got in, he would probably introduce facial recognition technology in a very malign and sinister way immediately. So it's not, I don't think, and I wouldn't mind you actually taking a swing at this, because I don't like zingers particularly, unless I've come up with them myself. I don't think that that argument brooks much criticism, but if you think that it does, 03456060973. You also have a tax code, as Ben points out. Your bank information, the data would simply establish that you are of this population, you are of this economy, you are part of this country. So what is not to like? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. You don't need ID cards. Here in Scandinavia, everybody is given a 10-digit person number. It's your date of birth plus four more digits. Everybody over 5 years old can recite it.
But I'm a person, not a number. Do you remember all that boomer bullshit? I'm a person, not a number, damn it. What was that, the prisoner?
Without hesitation. It's the first thing police, health or any government body asks for, says Julian, who's in Denmark. Well, what's the difference between that and a digital? Surely it's the same. And that's where the third element of this conversation kicks in, the technological side of it. What is the difference between a digital ID card, as is being mooted by the government, and I think reading between the lines seems very likely to come in, and all the other forms of ID that we have just listed? 03456060973. I don't know whether or not you would be required to carry...
Fuck off. Right, there's one more James O'Brien clip. The clip is called "How Have We Got Immigration So Wrong?" Maybe he'll talk some sense. Who knows? Let's give him a chance.
8 minutes after 10, and I have got a problem. It is happening. I guess it was perhaps inevitable. From the moment that Nigel Farage turned up in Dover with his Fisher-Price binoculars and started filming people coming in on small boats, people who constitute a tiny, tiny, tiny proportion of our overall immigration figures, and of whom, I think last time I checked, over 70% end up having their asylum applications approved. The narrative has been successfully, just as the narrative of European Union membership was successfully manipulated, the nation was successfully gaslit into believing lots and lots of things that weren't true. And the problem I've got is that I don't know how you deal with it. It's tempting to ignore it, isn't it? It's tempting to ignore the people who scream daily about one tiny aspect of our immigration situation and provide absolutely none of the facts that are necessary to forming an informed, evidence-based opinion. If we've learned anything in the last 10 years, it is what can happen when you have strong and pungent opinions that are not rooted in reality. That is when I think the really bad stuff happens. Do you remember? I'm haunted by the thoughts of a caller. Did we clip it up? I'm haunted by the memory of a caller from about, in my mind, it's about 3 months ago. And he said, I've got very strong opinions. And I said,
was it Morgoth? Did Morgoth's review ring in to James O'Brien? I'd love it if it was Morgoth.
Well, that's interesting. What are they based on? He said, it's not my job to base them on site. Do you remember that? I can't quite remember it. I think he speaks for a huge swathe of the population, and I don't know what to do about it. I mean, for an easy life, we could just ignore it, couldn't we? Together, you and I, plenty of other people on LBC will be wanging on about it forever. Again, possibly contributing to the problem that I'm about to describe to you rather than seeking to solve it. But do you surrender? Do you give up? Do you roll over? Do you choose the easier life? Because that way, madness lies. You ignore the facts and you leave the field free for the people who deliberately warp understanding and deliberately gaslight nations, then the really bad stuff happens. Have you seen the figures for Brexit? It's quite an apt moment, actually, to remind you of what happens when people actually get to see the rabbit, when people actually get to unwrap the box that has been placed under their Christmas tree by the likes of Boris Johnson and his mates. You actually get to see what's inside it, and support for not being in the European Union anymore plummets to, I think, about a third. And that is the problem I've got this morning. I don't know that there'll ever be an equivalent for immigration facts, immigration figures. And I know, listen, it's a really fertile ground.
Yeah, we've got the figures. We've got the figures from before all these people came in, and we've got the figures from after they come in. So we have the figures. The data is actually in, James.
To scream fear, to explain. Some people have even let the mask slip on occasion and revealed that they are in the business of selling fear, of scaring people regardless of the facts. But it sells newspapers. It brings in television audiences. It brings in radio audiences. Not the biggest, of course. That's us. But it does nonetheless bring in radio audiences. It delivers a frisson that you can't really deliver with the facts. How many times have I said to you that the queue for the ghost train will always be 100 times longer than the queue for the weight machine, the speak your weight machine? And it just is. It just is. Some people know it. Some people cling to the knowledge that they are peddling lies because it is a very good career. It's very lucrative. Some people are absolutely falling for an incredible...
Yeah, it's really lucrative to just be like fired from your job, to be ostracized from, you know, quote unquote, polite society, to be, you know, cancelled from this and that, to have lies written about you. It's really lucrative, James, really lucrative. Just to talk about what the facts are. And like I said, the data is in. We have the before and after. You just have to visit any town and compare that town with what it looked like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, when you grew up.
Incredibly widespread propaganda campaign. And it's not born of racism every time. I mean, there's a heck of a lot of racists up to their neck in this kind of stuff, but it's not born of racism. It's born of clicks and giggles. That gets a bigger following. That gets a bigger response. Everybody's poring over numbers. It used to be circulation figures. Now it's going to be online activity. What's getting the biggest responses? What's getting the biggest numbers? We're an unfashionable bunch.
The reason that people get big numbers, James, is because it's an actual problem that people care about. That's the reason it gets numbers. Canal,
on this program is that we always speak our minds and shoot from the hip and hope that things prove popular. What we don't do is have a look at what's popular and then seek to emulate or repeat it. But that is a position of privilege. I've been here for a very long time. And what has drawn my attention this morning is this. I give you this juxtaposition of headlines in Rupert Murdoch's Times newspaper. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. That's the news story, okay? And it's true. Let's be under no illusions about that. That is true. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. Okay?
I should mention, by the way, that I get comparable numbers to James O'Brien if you go on LBC's YouTube channel. Now, bear in mind that LBC's YouTube channel has 1.24 million subscribers, okay? And I have a fraction of that amount. My videos perform about as well or better than James O'Brien's videos on YouTube. Okay, so his claims about being like the biggest and the greatest and so on, I'm not sure about that. Obviously, they've got the Nielsen ratings and go out to the radio and so on and so forth. But if I had that sort of distribution, or if any of my buddies had that sort of distribution, that is, if, let's say, Sargon got an LBC show, or I got an LBC show, I would also do those numbers just by dint of the fact that it is broadcast to every radio in the country. So anyway, let's carry on.
It's a headline that you don't like, and it's based upon polling. You can, of course, say, well, no one asked me, or how can they possibly get a valid response from a sample of X thousand people? That the science of polling is fairly well established.
I'll also mention, by the way, that you can actually just see the figures on their YouTube channel. And Nigel Farage's show, okay, easily gets more views than James O'Brien's show. I'm just looking at it right now, just the figures like going back. Farage gets about 72,000 views on a lot, like on his last stream, the one with Nick Ferrari. He got 72,000 views. Typical James O'Brien video gets between 12,000 and 13,000, 10,000. That one, the digital ID one, right? Should we be worried? That got 10,000 views. This stream will easily get double that, right? Once all the views are counted in. So it's kind of like, it's a little bit disingenuous to say that he is the most popular, because even on his own, even on LBC, I can see Farage gets bigger numbers than O'Brien, just looking on what they do on YouTube. Okay, so anyway, let's carry on.
And while it's not infallible, it is largely reliable. It is the best available guide of what the public think about things. And this headline is true. Half of Britain's back, ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. But when you read into the research by YouGov, you make some discoveries that are not reflected in the top headline. I don't know if you heard yesterday's show when Sam Friedman, a former education panjandrum, explained to us how the newspapers were misleading you about private schools. You have a headline saying 50 private schools have closed since new Labour's VAT rules came in. But as you read down that article, you would have discovered, if you were relying on the facts rather than the frightening headlines, that the number of private schools in this country has risen in total since that VAT rule was brought in by about 35, and that the number of private schools that shut every year before and after Labour's VAT changes was around 50. So you see what I mean about manipulating or misleading or even straight up lying to people, because this is the headline and it is true. I have to keep coming back to that point. Half of Britain's back, ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. And then you read into the second bit. The research also suggests that the public is misinformed about the nature of migration to the UK, with many overestimating the proportion coming illegally. Now, I mean, even I...
Right, who gives... Right. Obviously, people know that there's been a massive influx of foreigners, okay, into the country, especially since Boris wave, okay? Who cares if they're legal or illegal? He's just getting down into minutiae here. He's saying, oh, look, people can't like accurately guess the percentage of them that are illegal. Okay. So what is he saying? He's basically just saying like the immigration problem is a lot bigger than anyone realizes. And the media focuses on small boats a bit too much. Okay. If that's the case, fine. They all have to go, right? This is not an argument. This is just saying like, oh, the bloke on the street can't accurately guess how many are legal and illegal.
As someone who does this stuff for a living, albeit that I find it hard to zone in on this particular issue every single day in a way that people who are peddling perhaps the propaganda that creates this misinformation and creates this misunderstanding seem to relish.
I can't do it anymore. Fuck it, I just cannot stand him. That's enough. Let's do the super chats. Super thanks. I tell you what, I got pretty good powers of self-control. And I did, like I said, I did my meditations and prep. But there's something, he is like the end boss, isn't he? James O'Brien is the end boss. He's the end boss. I can't. Oh, man. Gives me a headache. Anyway, are you happy now? Are you happy? You got your... Anyway. Right. So, super thanks. Monothalmus on last week's Office Hours says, The actual power of the EU rests with the heads of the governments that make the most important decisions. The bureaucracy in Brussels is mostly just deals with minor details. Von der Leyen's predecessor, Juncker, was a capable operator. She is a joke installed by Macron in order to neutralize the European Commission. Just look at how Erdogan snubs von der Leyen every time there is a meeting between the Turkish government and the EU. So if she negotiates such a deal, she either had it greenlit earlier by major European governments, or she acted alone and will be corralled by said governments, and the deal will likely fall through or be modified. Yes, I thought that was the case, Monothelmus, when I was did that stream last week on the Trump deal. I mean, look, you've got double bullshit there. Anything to do with Trump is bullshit. We know that, right? Anything to do with Trump is ultimately bullshit. So you know that all that von der Leyen's done is give the ever-dwindling MAGA faithful, you know, a new cycle to celebrate and, you know, yeah, another victory. Take that, panicans. Take that, panicans. Get back in the crystal, panicans. Right? It's just bullshit to give them. And you know it's going to be nixed. You know that deal is not going to happen because it was just too bad. Mikey Horton says, what do you think about the new EU tobacco tax? Well, it does not affect me because I'm not under EU tobacco tax. So there is that. Sterling on why James Lindsay loses it over Carl Schmitt says, thank God you're back, boyo. Well, thank you very much, Sterling. Alphonse Rides Again on last week's Deepest Law says, future generations will look at 2016 the way the 20th century left looked at 1848, a symbolic sliding door that didn't lead to immediate material victories, but heralded the changes that were to come. Well, let's hope you're right, Alphonse Rides Again. I remember people saying that about Brexit, so maybe. On the same video, Blackadur says, Romans 12:19-21, do not avenge yourselves, dear friends, but give place to God's wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Rather, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing this, you will be helping, heaping burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Romans 13:3-4. For rulers cause no fear for conduct, for good conduct, but for bad. But you desire not to fear authority? Do good, and you will receive its condemnation, for it is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be in fear, for it does not bear the sword in vain. It is God's servant to administer retribution on the wrongdoer. Very interesting. We were talking, that is in reference to the conversation that we had about revenge and the morality and nature of revenge at the end of that stream, where I actually spoke against taking revenge, even though it's emotionally satisfying and so on. I think there's wisdom in the view, basically, that really you shouldn't let it consume you. And these passages from Romans, speak to that. JDA on what if everything you know about Stalin is a lie? I tell you, that video did numbers. Last I checked, it was on about 40,000 views. Pretty good for an esoteric video about Stalin, eh? He says, have you read Stalin's War by Sean McMeekin? Good info on the cooperation with FDR and war from the Soviet perspective. He has interviews on here where he says there was no reason for Britain to fight a war with Germany, and the guarantee caused good war. Caused the war. I have McMeekin here. And McMeekin is a source of some very, very deep red pills if you know what to look for. He doesn't outright say it, right? But if you read McMeekin and you keep a track of a certain few little details, there are a great many red pills in that book. I'll just say that. many red pills in there. Okay, let's carry on. Mobile 5 in mobile. On the same video, the Stalin video says, if we assume that those who embellish lies about Stalin also say there is a connection to Germany, and we discover that the group of people who did this was a group of people who with a grudge against Germany for the same reason, I think it might be pretty simple to identify which group of people this is, and it may be logical to assume their embellishment extends beyond Russia. Well, Mobile 5, it's very easy to identify the group of people who did it, because it was Trotsky. It was the Trotskyists. It was Trotskyists who left Russia and went to New York. It was Trotsky's New York friends who spread those lies. We know who it was. And when I have Grover Fur on, I'm sure he'll bring forensic detail to the case, right? He is an 81-year-old old guy, right? He's an old-fashioned Bolshevik leftist, Marxist-Leninist, okay? So it's going to be a very different sort of conversation. I'm going to pre-record it. There's not going to be a group chat. I'm going to be on my absolute best behavior with him. I'm going to treat him, with the respect that you'd give any 81-year-old professor, right? But he is going to bring receipts in that conversation, I guarantee you. Okay. Dexit 79 says, how do you know what you know about Stalin's atrocities? Is a great argument and piqued my interest further. Thanks. Well, thank you very much, Dexit. I'm telling you, right, everybody concentrates. This is one of the reasons I'm focusing on this, is that everybody in our spheres concentrates on revisionism in another area. I'll just put it that way. They always look over at Germany and what happened there. You can't understand the Boomer Truth regime without understanding that the Cold War, most of the Cold War, was fake. Okay? The Cold War was fake. Right, it was a Fugazi. Listen to Thomas 777 on if you want some great Cold War revisionism. Much of the Cold War was fake, okay. And the way to truly understand what happened there, okay, and why is the evil? The question you have to ask is, why is the evil of communism, okay, the quote unquote evil of communism, localized and personified in the single figure of Stalin? Why is it always Stalin who gets the focus? It's never Lenin. Lenin still has, documentaries on the BBC that say actually he was an all right guy and all of that. The view that you have of Stalin is Trotsky's view. The view that the neocon cold warriors had of the Soviet Union and of Stalin was the view that Trotsky gave them, and they were all former Trotskyists. You can't understand the Cold War until you understand that the foundational beliefs about the Soviet Union that you have were born from propaganda written by Stalin's ideological enemies within the Bolsheviks. This is highly significant information. The Boomer Truth regime is lies all around. It's lies in the round. Okay, it's not just this one. You've got to think, right? If you're questioning one half of the story over here, and you say, well, a lot of these lies were told about these people over here who were our enemies in the war. Okay, but all of the things that those same historians say about the Soviet Union, well, they're true. The same historians who lie about this country over here tell the truth about this country over there. Is that likely? Is that logical? Does that sound right? So that's why I'm doing it. Why did Tucker Carlson go after Nick Fuentes? Sidi says, thanks. Sorry for audio whinging in the comments. Stop banging. Yeah, a lot of people say, since I've been doing my pieces to camera, when I start getting carried away, I start banging the table. And if you're listening to on your headphones, apparently the bangs are really quite loud. I'm going to have to do something about that. I might put a cushion on the table in front of me so to cushion the blow. Because, when you're recording, you just can't help it. You just get carried away. And I, for some reason, I've got this habit of banging the table. Mr. Dave Mann just says, thanks. And Principal Uncertainty says, did you see Dave Smith and Alex Bearson debate on Zero Hedge? Murray on Joe Rogan now seems up there with Gore Vidal versus William F. Buckley. It's worth a chuckle or two if you have time. Yeah, it's been a very interesting. It's been very interesting since I put out that video, I will say that I was expecting more of a backlash. Actually, I got more backlash on the Stalin than I did on the Nick Fuentes. I'll just put it that way. A few people have pushed back, but a lot of people actually went and watched the video, came back on mine and said, yeah, it's one of the best things I've ever seen. And even now I'm seeing on Twitter, Carl Benjamin and people like that, who've taken the time to listen to what was said and so on, are actually giving Nick a shake, okay? And I think, I mean, the way I've put it to people is this, okay? The way I put it is this. That kid has talent. Huge amount of talent, okay? And at the moment in the world, you know, things are shit. And we got so many enemies. We got so many people who are on the side of one of the most evil regimes of all time. And the proposition of taking of being like, okay, in this struggle here, you're right, you've got a, it's like you've got Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi, okay, that kind of level talent, but you're just going to leave him out the squad. You're going to leave him on the bench. But you're going to leave him on the bench. You're just not going to put him in. You're just going to leave him out in the cold because he's a gay man. He's gay or something, or because he pissed off some. You know, that can't, going forward, right, that can't be the thing, especially now that he's as good as he is. I really believe that there has to be a kind of amending of the fences going forward, because in the past year, it's become increasingly obvious who the enemies are, right? Who the enemies are. It's become really, really obvious. And you have to give it to him. He's been spot on pretty much every topic in the past 6 months, 8 months, 10 months. So what is gained by going at him? Nothing. What is gained by going at Devin Stack? Nothing. Nothing is gained whatsoever. You're actually doing the work of the enemy if you go against those guys like that, or going at me, for example. You're just doing the work of the enemy. So I honestly think that there has to be some sort of, like, I don't know what you call it, entente, cool off. I know he's always been a decisive figure. I know he's attacked people in the past when he was younger and a bit more immature and stuff like that. But the time, like, things have changed. The people have to process the fact that the MAGA gambit, the Trump gambit, hasn't paid off. It's been a colossal fucking failure, right? Even me, I'm going to write a piece for a magazine I write for tomorrow, probably. Even I, right, who had very low expectations of Trump, really low expectations. I thought he was going to be a regime stooge, and I thought he was going to come in as Ronald Reagan, okay, and just kind of like put everybody back to sleep for a while. That's what I thought he was going to do, right, which is very low expectations. He has been way worse than that on every single, he has been so much worse than even the lowest possible expectations because of how balls out blatantly he has betrayed everybody and how in the pocket he is of what I can only could describe as Team Epstein, right? He has been that bad on every single issue. This thing in the past 24 hours of, you're going to be denied disaster relief if you've spoken out against Israel, right? Now, people chimped out enough that that was next, right? That was next. It was that unpopular. But the very fact that he'd think, or that administration could even think about doing that, is so mental. It's so beyond the pale. It's ridiculous how bad Trump has been in this past 6 months. Okay, so the the kind of captive dreamer position, the bat position, all of these are completely discredited at this moment. Okay, there is no settlement anymore. And moving forward, this is going to be the conversation, because the next question will be what comes after MAGA. Okay, and Nick has done phenomenal work on who is JD Vance. How did JD Vance become a thing? What is it that the money men behind the scenes and Peter Thiel want to do with JD Vance? Okay, they want to make that the ticket, the next thing. He is onto that already. And it's pretty important that you just don't keep on falling into the same mistakes over and over and over again, stepping on rake after rake after rake after rake. Okay, this is why I keep on directing people to him, Devin Stack, who is just on it all day, every day. He's on it. He knows the jig is up. The jig is up. Okay, in this country, Farage is not the solution. Okay, you don't get Farage does not get a free vote. He doesn't get a free vote because he makes some sounds in the right direction. Can't be that. With things on the table as they are, I'm voting for Jeremy Corbyn. I am voting for Jeremy Corbyn until they put up the real deal. And in this country, that means it's Rupert Lowe or nothing. Rupert Lowe or nothing in this country. Okay, and in America, they have to do the same. We're not putting up with it anymore. No more of this ersatz, weak, feckless, fake populism. It's bullshit. The real deal or nothing. That has to be the position. I saw Siobhan Head, right? Do you remember Siobhan Head, that kind of and me looking girl from back in the day? I don't know what her politics are now. She said, I've become a single issue voter. If I see a politician kissing that wall, right, in Israel, I am not voting for them. I am a single issue voter. Anybody who doesn't touch the wall gets my vote. Anybody who does touch the wall does not get my vote. Okay? That has to be what it is going forward in America. And in this country, the same. No more nonsense. No more Richard Tice or Farage. Like, it cannot be. And until people get that message, you're going to keep on running into the same brick wall again and again and again and again. Why have we been betrayed again and again and again and again? Oh, we had a deal. We had a deal. I thought, where's the bit? Where's the bit that you promised us? How come it's everything for them and nothing for us? Well, some of us told you that 6 months ago, a year ago. You're trying to make a deal with the least trustworthy people in the entire history of the world. You fucking stupid. Anyway, let's carry on. Let's carry on. Let me light up this cigar. Tell you what, my chill. It's James O'Brien, I tell you. He's got me amped up today. He's got me amped up. He's got me amped up. He's got me amped up. People saying Rupert Lowe is the same. If he comes out and starts doing all that shit, then he's no good either, right? He's no good either if he starts coming out and doing all of that. From what I've seen, he's not been doing that. Okay, let's carry on. Actual super chats now. So in the entropy, Sam153 says, to aid in the slow midsummer slop week. Thank you very much, Sam153. It means so much. Yiz says, the WCW channel recently added 24 classic pay-per-view matches. I watched the legendary Ravishing Rick Rude versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat 30-minute Iron Man match from 1992. Great stuff. Now, let me think. 1992, Rick Rude versus Ricky Steamboat. That's a great match. I think that was from Beach Blast. Beach Blast 92. Am I right, Yiz? It's Beach Blast, isn't it? Beach Blast 92. Am I right? Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm right. Okay, let's carry on. Yeah, Beach Blast. Great, great event as well. I tell you what, I love WCW 1992. That is one of the best years of wrestling. right, 1992, WCW, Dangerous Alliance, it's Rick Rude, it's Stunning Steve Austin, it's Paulie Dangerously there with his big phone, Arn Anderson, Larry Zbysko and Bobby Eaton. What a kick-ass stable the Dangerous Alliance were. And then you've got like Steamboat, Surfer Sting, Vader is in town. Vader was fucking awesome in 1992. 1992, WCW, is one of the best years of wrestling you'll ever see. And weirdly, Flair is over in WWF in 1992, and that's a banner year too. Royal Rumble 92 is fucking brilliant. You know, Flair, Savage. 92 in general is probably the best year of pro wrestling in the history of wrestling, because over in Japan, the All Japan crew, Misawa and, you know, Kobashi and Kawada, you know, the Four Pillars, Jumbo Tsuruta was winding down, Stan Hansen. That stuff from 92 in All Japan is out of this world. Some of the best wrestling of all time. 1992 is probably the best year in the history of pro wrestling, or at least one of the best years. So, yeah, great luck. I mean, and everybody in that generation is like at their peak, at the top of their game, all season pros, just legendary rosters. It's a great time. It's a great time. Okay. Where are we? Where are we? Coney says, Yiz says, I think NPCs being forced to speak on our issues is a bit of a win, but I'll take it. All I know, we all know the Overton window and the power of the people is BS. But discourse matters and our efforts are making a big difference. So we should keep pushing, keep hard. I think you're right. You're right, Yiz. You're right. Basically, the conversation is much closer to where we were. Am I banging the table again? I'm not even in the same place. I'm banging the table again. Sorry, guys. Sorry. I'm fired up today. I don't know why. I came into this stream low energy, not feeling it, chilled out, you know, and now look at me, the state of me. Look at the fucking state of you. All right, let's carry on. JP says, every problem is real. Every solution is bad. There is no political solution. AB says, you dropped the bomb on us yesterday that we are desperate to delve into and ruminate over. And now you follow it up with hours of mind-numbingly mundane LBC commentary. Do you despise us that much? Well, AB, welcome to the channel, sir. Coney says, do you see the video of Jim Acosta promoting his new interview of an AI version of a victim of a school shooting created by his parents? It's the most sickening and disturbing thing I've seen all month. I have not seen that, Coney, and I'm not sure I want to see it, to be honest. Fudd says, Lowe indicated that UK was intimidated by pro-Palestine, but does not ever bring up the you-know-whos and their influence. Sus, red flag like Trump? Well, I haven't seen him hugging an Israeli flag yet. I haven't seen him do that. So we'll see. We'll see. Christian Troy says, AA, why has Dumanat started attacking you? Honestly, I don't know. Honestly, he was that guy who went on that Media San show, and then he did like a few podcasts after that, and then randomly he started attacking me. And he started attacking me in the most retarded possible way. He said, look, at this event, you were at this event, and Curtis Yarvin was at this event. And Curtis Yarvin is funded by Peter Thiel. Therefore, AA is a bad actor. Because you met Curtis Yarvin, you must be taking Thiel money or something, right? And I'm like, well, no, not really. You have to understand that if you just go to it, there are going to be different people speaking at events, okay? I was at an event a while back, and Steven Pinker was there, right? I have made videos criticizing the life's work of Steven Pinker, and yet I was there at an event with Steven Pinker. Now I'm related to him and I have to own all of his works. It's just stupid, isn't it? It's just really, really stupid. So I don't really like that sort of kind of, it's like the lowest IQ possible attack. And I said to him, I was like, what, are you working with the Southern Poverty Law Center? Like, what is this? You know, oh, you once breathed the same air as Curtis Yarvin, therefore you must love him or something, you know? I mean, let's not forget that speech I gave. If you go back and watch the Octopus speech, which is the speech I gave at that event, was an actual critique. It was a critique of Curtis Yarvin's cathedral model, and it gave an alternative model of how the regime, as we called it, worked, where I pointed to what Spengler would call the money power, okay? And for my efforts, Yarvin, in that actual event, said, hey, you're like a Marxist, aren't you? It's not them. It's really the media that runs the show, right? So there was actually a genuine philosophical disagreement between me and Yarvin, right? That the heart of that was a disagreement on how power functions, how it works. I said it comes from money first and foremost. He said it comes from the media first and foremost and the universities. Who was right and who was wrong? Now in 2025, what, it's the universities who have the power? The universities got shut down because they protested against some country in the Middle East, and massive billionaires like Bill Ackman put pressure on them, and the Trump administration, who is the government of the USA, right? Bill Ackman said jump and Trump said how high. So who has the power, Curtis? Is it the universities? Is it Harvard? Or is it Bill Ackman? I was right. Yarvin was wrong. So Duma guy, stick that in your pipe and smoke it, if you're not too young to smoke. Right, let's carry on. Kay says, what the hell is Dumanat's problem with you? His attack on you was insanely stupid and random. Well, I just addressed that. But the real thing is he's just young. He's just young and stupid. What is he, like 18 or 19 or something? He's just stupid. He'll learn. Maybe he'll learn in time. Right? But this is my point. Coming back to Fuentes, this is my point. He was young too at one point. And he may have made attacks in the past that were ill-advised and so on. What I'm saying is he's come of age and you've got to like rise above it. You've got to rise it, like let bygones be bygones. I've had run-ins with so many people over the years. And at a certain point, you just have to be like, look, we're on the same side. We have to let the bad blood go. I retweeted Keith Woods the other day. I don't care. Our enemies are bigger than whatever personal beef me and Keith Woods had 3 years ago. Right? I mean, we have to rise above all this in the struggle. Okay? But we also have to keep an eye on the things that Nick is pointing to here. Right. Why is Candice Owens poisoning the discourse with all of her tangential nonsense? Right. Where everybody was talking about Epstein. Macron's wife is a man. Who gives a fucking shit? Who cares about that? Why are you diverting the attention over there? Like I said on the video yesterday. I don't like the way that Tucker always throws in, oh yeah, but do you know that aliens are real? Huh? Well, aliens? Who cares about aliens? This country's falling apart. I don't give a fuck about aliens. Anyway, let's carry on. Cringe Walker says, how do you all tolerate all this gaslighting? We don't, Cringe Walker, we don't. When it's a quiet news week like this, I usually do an LBC show to remind everybody about what the average person consumes out there. But I might stop doing it because it's bad for my blood pressure. 2 minutes hate says watching this gets me in fight or flight mode. I know. They've got the audacity. These people have the audacity to say, oh, yeah, young people today are being radicalized by online figures like Andrew Tate and Sargon of Akkad. Right? It's not. It's fucking you. The radicalizing thing is just watching James O'Brien. That's the thing that radicalizes people. It's literally just watching regime propaganda, because it's so disconnected from the lived reality of every person in this country that it really does get you riled up. So the question is, who is responsible for radicalizing more people than anyone else in this country? It is James O'Brien. Personally, he is responsible. Oman says, haven't had time to comment on your live streams in a while. Keep up the fight on those who called Spengler the vermin of journalism. Clear them out. Yeah, it's been a while. Where is he? Where is he? I tell you what, as catharsis, where is...
Clear them out. Clear out. Clear them out. You've got to clear them out. You've got to clear them out as well. There needs to be a new start.
Current mood. Okay, let's carry on. Alex Lamont says, AA, what's your take on Britain's long-term ability to hold the Raj? From what I know, admin costs were going up as well as unrest in the native population. Do you think Britain could have held on, or was the project doomed? Well, if you read Major General Richard Hilton, he thinks that it could have been held on to. If it wasn't for internal subversion, leftism, Christian charity and democracy and all these kind of nonsense things, the kind of boomer truth in embryo, I guess you might say, but the 1930s version of it, the version of it that George Orwell talks about when he talks about the English intelligentsia, right, in the 1930s. I think Morgoth had a stream about that recently. I think, was it Morgoth on UK Column talking about that, if memory serves? But, yeah, I mean, there was a version of it back then. And basically it was this. It's this mind virus, the woke mind virus, to use an Elon Muskism, that was really responsible. Because people within the British government lost kind of, they basically came to see colonialism as a bad in and of itself, you know. So, but anyway, read Imperial Obituary for more. Cameron Kirby says, the NPC went to Birmingham to interview people a while back and no one talked to him because they couldn't speak English. It seems like the NPC has been on a slow red pill journey since. What is the name of that NPC? What is the name of the LBC NPC? What's his name? Anybody know? Yeah, they weren't Victorian, Robert. They were, I guess you'd say, like, it's really the era of Elizabeth II's father, George. Was it George VI and a little bit before? Was there a George V in that time as well? It goes Victoria, Edward. Is it George V and then George VI? Is that how it goes? There was that other king, I think George V. It was really during his period. Intboom says, if crime has no meaningful ethnic component on the part of the perpetrators, then there is no reason to believe that there was ever a racial motivation for the supposed lynchings in the 20th century. Oh, well, their explanation for that in Boom is because they were all innocent, of course. All of the lynchings were, all those accused were innocent. It was just racism. That's literally the explanation they give. And what they do is they find a few kind of isolated incidents where the guy was innocent, maybe, and they hold them up as normative. They hold those up as basically typical. Again, if you want the truth on the topic of lynchings, Devon Stack has got plenty of streams on that topic, and I'll point you to him yet again. Seamus O'Blaine says, in the novel Blindsight, the aliens attack Earth as they perceive language as a contentless virus that wastes resources. This feels like that, lol. Absolutely. And I think that is it for the super. Is that it? Please be it for the super chats. I think that is it. Nope. Coney says, what are your reasons for thinking the regime might self-correct on immigration around or after 2029? I'd very much wish it to be the case, but I'm concerned a more tragic vision of the future awaits. Well, I mean, I saw something just before I came on air as one example, right? As one example. So this is, in my opinion, the regime slowly realizing they're not going to be able to get out of not addressing this. Let me just play this from the news agent.
You feel that there is a moral panic at the moment, that this is kind of unprecedented and that things have spiraled and spun out of
spiral is the right word. There's
it's just gone
spiral,
mad. It's gone terribly out of control in the past. Well, no, it's been a continuation of what we've had for years. It's just the language which is being used now is different. I thought it was interesting, Nigel Farage today, who we thought this morning that there was going to be some huge high-level defection to reform, because we were briefed about a news conference that Farage was giving, and it turned out to be some prospective parliamentary candidate in Leicestershire that I don't think people...
Kem is finished.
..in Leicestershire had heard of, let alone anywhere else. But he made this point about there are some people coming to this country. I mean, there are other statistics around, you know, that are being used by the writer.
Somebody saying that James O'Brien is not as bad as Campbell and Stewart. I don't know about that. Shall we just do a little of a bit of a who is worse? Let me hold on. I'm going to do a poll. Who is worse? Who is worse? James O'Brien, Stewart. Let's see who wins. Let's see.
I mean, so Robert Jenrick used one of them this morning, saying that in London, 25% of the population are migrant, but 40% of sexual abuse crimes are being carried out by foreigners. And you think, oh, my God, so the problem has got way worse. Now, it may be that this statistic is right. It's come from a freedom of information request from a kind of right wing think tank. So, I don't know what the numbers are, but you can see how that is being weaponized. And Farage was saying there are societies that treat women very differently. You know, if you go to Afghanistan today and see what is happening to women living under the Taliban, it is a very different way of life than what you would find if you were a woman living in Western Europe. So there are areas where, you know, and violence against women is much more commonplace in some of these societies. It's absolutely true. What the left mustn't do, or centrist politicians, or those who kind of, it's just to say this is complete and utter nonsense, you're a filthy racist. There are things that Farage says which need to be addressed, and that's what he does so cleverly.
Yeah, well,
So you see, they're defeated. They know that the jig is up. The jig is up when it comes to immigration. That's why I think the regime, as we call them, will make some effort to try to put this issue away by actually dealing with it. Because the alternative is getting closer to the David Bett scenario. The more they leave it unchecked, or the more they, you know, look at just the effect of watching James O'Brien has on the thousands of people who watch this show and on me. So they're gonna have to do something. They really are going to have to do something. But as I said on Twitter earlier on, it is also like the competency crisis, bio-Leninism is so total that they're even like fumbling the ball on the containment. Right? Farage himself is just so fucking useless. Even on the trans issue, right? Even on the trans issue, the easiest issue in the entire world to deal with for a populist party, an issue that has been dealt with, an issue that has been defeated by like J.K. Rowling, he still managed to fumble the ball, to drop the ball, to fuck it up, to give people, Farage is useless. He really is. Sometimes I wonder if it's deliberate, if it's actually deliberate how bad he is. But, you know, we'll see. I'm not going to vote. I absolutely refuse to vote for Farage, by the way. He is not the answer. By the way, the poll is in, and 74% of people say James O'Brien is worse than Rory Stewart. And I have to say, like, here's the thing. James O'Brien winds me up on a visceral level a lot. He always gets to me. Even when I think I've steadied myself and I'm chill and zen and calm and all the rest of it, James O'Brien will always do something that just gets my goat. Stewart is more insidious. He's more... It's more like the feeling of a nails on a chalkboard. It just goes through me, right? He's so, like, sinewy and worm-like, you know? He goes through me, right? So Stewart just kind of... I get a disgust response to Stewart, whereas James O'Brien fucking enrages me. I think that's the difference. If I had to put it's two slightly different responses that those two figures elicit. All right. I think that's it for all of them. Just checking entropy again in case nobody moans at me. I'll be back tomorrow for reviewing Adam Curtis part two. We're going to be on at a slightly earlier time because people like Nick Dixon so much. He's going to come back, but he's got his show later. So we're moving back to 11 a.m. Tomorrow for the second part of Hypernormalization. Pick up a course, like I said, Trivium, Foundations of Writing. God knows how many people need that. Logic, even more people know that. Rhetoric, even more people need that. And, Foundations of Shakespeare, all the other great courses, politics, economics, entrepreneurship, you name it, it's there. And I will see you tomorrow.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.